success number 31400, reel 3.
Okay, strike reel 3. Hey, so were there any other preparations? You mentioned earlier that the kind of training was quite intense for
Herrick.
Yeah,
we learned everything, you know, from cardiovac drills to being able to provide casualty assistance on the ground, you know, medivacs, you know, everything got smashed into us, you know, from worst case scenarios upwards, got drilled into us, you know, section attacks, you know, all your drills, your SOPs, where you'd place bits of kit in case, you know, something did happen. Everything got smashed into you. Vehicle drills got smashed into you. Everything got absolutely smashed into your mind. So you'd think, you know, well, fucking hell.
You were aware then that this was probably going to be completely different from your Iraqi tour, were you?
Yeah, well, I didn't think it would be, but it was. I was quite ignorant.
Was there a change in your engagement as well that you were going to be able
to? Yeah, he was on the card 49 Alpha.
And then how does that differ from the...
Well, if you think someone's going to pose a threat, you can kill them.
So essentially, that decision is yours, is it, at that stage when you're looking at
someone? Yeah, if you feel as though your life's about to become endangered, or anyone in your seat is about to become endangered due to that person, you can kill them. Or you can shoot to injure, depending on how you feel. If you see someone in a desolate area walking, and you think, what's he doing? You just can't kill him. Because he could be out for a walk, a bit mad, but he might be. But it's happened a few times where you've seen someone, people walking, and you think, hang on, what's he doing? And then they've gone into a compound, and seconds later, you've heard, where they've just started smashing you. You think, well, right, I'm going to, you know, engage.
And with that as well, obviously, can you then engage people as well who you think might be aiding the...
It depends. If you're in contact, and... Yeah, if you honestly felt as though your life was in danger, or if you or anyone else, then you can take appropriate force. But you just can't kill someone and go, oh, you're the Taliban. What proof did you have? Nothing. You just can't do that. It depends on the situation. But no, he's under card 49 Alpha for more or less the whole tour.
And at this stage, were you still a C company, or have you...
No, at this point I've moved over to D Support Weapons Company in 2005. I moved over to 20 tank platoon.
So what equipment did you have with that? What were you operating?
Javelin.
Can you tell me about that?
Yes, Javelin weapon system. You can fire up to 2 rounds a minute, depending on the gunner. It's a heat-seeking missile. So if you've got a target of a significant heat source, you can lock onto that target, fire, and you don't have to track it. You can just reload and fire again while the missile's still in the air.
What kind of level of heat does it need to lock on?
Human, animal, you know, anything with a heat source you can lock onto with the track gates and you can engage.
And once you've locked on, does it stick with that heat source? It won't get tempted away?
But it's very rarely it will jump lock and it will jump onto another heat source. It's only happened a few times. But, you know, more or less of the time, if you've got your track gates around that, as tight as you can around that heat source, and you press your seek trigger to have a solid crosshairs, you'd release, you'd do it again and press the fire to make sure it's definitely on, it will hit that target.
And did you have, obviously, more chance by firing with the Javelins?
I fired 9 in theatre.
Did you fire any before you went?
No.
Is that an expense thing?
64 grand a missile. I fired 9. You know, some of our blokes fired 18. You know, in total, I think our platoon fired something like 164 Javelin missiles. You know, I think I fired in total 64 grand a missile. I think it was something short of. It was over $500,000. Easy. I fired off. It was well worth it.
So prior to going though, is it just a simulation that you do then?
Yeah, you're indoor trainer, so you're learning on the drills, you know, you're firing, you know, taking it off the tripod, down, missile off, missile on, back on, track, you know, seek trigger, wait for it to go through the cooldown, bring up your firing screen, track gate solution, crosshair, seeker fire, you know, you're going through it all, misfire drills, BCU drills, you know, your BCU back-to-calling unit, you're going through every drill possible, your top attack, your direct attack, you know, it has a significance on how it affects targets and everything. So, you know, we drop like drummed into us, you know.
And as a javelin operator, do you operate on your own?
No, it's a two-man team. You've got your number one, number two, you know, respectively, fire the javelin missile, and one's, I say spotter, but he's man sorts out the missiles and the post. You know, he's land next to you, you know, sort of to the side so the back blast from the javelin don't get you. As soon as it's done, you know, that tube's expendable, throw it. Other tube pass to him, done. As soon as you're done, right. You know, pack up, let's go.
And how did you transport this? I mean, obviously,
man pack or vehicle.
With the man pack, is it easy for you two-man team to carry?
No, in Afghan, well, on Herrick, I was carrying my own kit with javelin missile in excess of £120. That was two javelin missiles plus, you know, six grenades, smoke grenades, frost grenades, you know, frag grenades, six magazines, bandolier, something like 500 GPMG link, moth spray body armour, which weighed, you know, I think it's something like £32 just on its own, plus water.
Obvious question, how tiring is that?
It's very, depending on, it's, the heat is just outrageous. You know, you're going through that, and, you know, whether it be you're clearing compounds, you know, because in Kajaki, we were man packing this through compounds, we were clearing compounds with javelin kit on, you know, by the end of it, you're smashed, your body's in bits. You know, and it's you get used to it, you have to, you know, even though you've been in contact for like, say, 7 hours or 6 hours, you've then got a rapid extract, hard extraction out of the area, so you're running. If you haven't fired the missiles, you're running with it back.
And I take it's important, though, even though you're that tired, to keep as switched on as possible with what's going on around you.
You have to, because the minute you switch off, you're dead. You have to, there's no if or buts, you know, they're a determined enemy. They're quite switched on, you know, you've got to stay focused. Even if you're tired, you've still got to pay attention, because the minute you switch off is, importantly, you know, the minute you die.
Can I take you back to, obviously, getting out of there? You did a bit of acclimatisation training in Kenya, hadn't you, I think? And then did you go from Kenya or did you come back to the UK?
No, I came back to the UK for about a week or two. Went out to Afghanistan, went to Kandahar, from Kandahar to Bastion via Chinook.
Can I ask you the travelling in Chinooks? I mean, obviously, I take it you must have done some of that in the UK, but is there a sort of different technique when you're in theatre?
It is different, because when you're landing in, I say hotspots, when you're landing in a place like Sangin or Kajaki, you just get the kit off. You know, where you can, you know, mince sort of in the UK, you've got to get the kit off as quick as possible, because it's bigger targets, so it's more susceptible to, you know, enemy fire.
And when you're getting off, obviously you're getting off, is there a problem with dust and grit and all sorts of stuff flying around when you get off one of those?
Yeah, massively. Obviously, most of the places you go to are very heavily desert, you know, orientated. You know, Sangin was a dust bowl, Fobob was a dust bowl, Kajaki wasn't, it was on top of the mountains, so you'd be alright, you'd get odd stone and probably smack in the face, but, you know, Fob Inkerman was a dust bowl, Nowzad was a dust bowl, you know, so you're waiting for it to clear before you can see what you're doing. You know, you're off with your goggles, you know, your kit's off, you just throw your kit off, you know, get any other kit off, you, what's on there as a fire support group, FSG, or company, or whatever you're with, you know. Turn your backs, shin it goes, as soon as it's done, that kit's then obviously gone to wherever. But yeah, you've got to do it pretty quick.
And who were you attached to first off? Were you attached to a company?
B Company. I was part of FSG Bravo, fire support group Bravo, which consisted of machine gunners, snipers, anti-tanks. And we cut around in Wimix, E-Wimix.
Can you describe to me what they're like? Because obviously different from the Snatch.
Stripped down Land Rover. Majorly stripped down Land Rover with a GPMG mount on the front and a 50 cal GMG mount on the top, on the roof. Holds up to four people. You load your kit up on the sides, you know, you've got shed loads of ammo in there. And we was on MOGs first of all, and you go out with Viking armoured vehicles, which the Royal Marines used, and Wemix, and you just go out and have, pick a fight.
So where were you first up to? Sorry, because I interrupted you when you were saying you flying up in a Chinook from Camp Bastion. Where did you go? Where was your first rotation?
Fob Bromington, which is 6k from Sangin.
Can you describe that to me, what it's like as an operating base?
Shithole.
Why is that?
It's just derelict. It's just ridiculous. You get out there and you're living in huts. I say huts, you're living in buildings which... Like, you're living in a compound which has been adapted for a base, and you've got like 8 sayers around it, and it's dusty and it's annoying.
What facilities have you got? What are they?
Nothing. Didn't shave because you couldn't, because it was too dusty and the lack of water. Your toilets were makeshift toilets, what you'd burn every day. You know, your depositories you'd burn, all your rubbish would get, you know, massive hole in the ground you'd burn, and you'd live on rations.
How long was the first rotation through in there? How long were you in that place for?
I was in Fobroth for about 4 weeks.
And with that, you say you go out, and are you basically operationally you're just going out to find?
Going out to find Taliban and guys.
What are the nearest kind of locations that you were going into around?
Sangin.
Robinson. What was the situation in Sangin? Because obviously, you know, the year before, that was where the paras had been. Had it changed by the time you were there?
It had changed, but we still got smashed in Sangin. We got ambushed in Sangin, so as a result of that, my friend, Dean, got hit by 2 RPGs. His arm was hanging off. You know, as a result of that, they managed to save his arm, but he's deaf in both ears, and he's now discharged from the army.
Can you tell me what happened? Take me through what happened in the ambush. What you were doing and how it happened.
Well, I wasn't on the ground. I was kept back with a few others because it was a cut down patrol. But I remember hearing the gunfire and what one of my good friends, Pete, Corporal Pete 20, was the sergeant there.
Sorry.
They'd gone down the road and it was really quiet. They'd gone through the wadi, and as they come up, they got hit by Dushka fire on the roofs either side. Remember hearing an RPG, well, I remember being told an RPG went past Dino and it hit the fuel tank, or the fuel drums on top, that exploded. He was on fire, but he got down and took his body armour off. You know, and he had the balls to get back up and to carry on fighting until a second RPG from the opposite side hit the roof and ripped his arm off. From then on, you know, the vehicle's on fire. And it was still there when we come back to Sangin, down over Shell. But he got dragged out. And we got caught on guardie, we got smashed. You know, from then on, everyone was like, you know, we just want to give them what they've gave us.
In a situation like that, and you are in ambush, do you adapt to the situation? Either do you try and get out of it as quick as possible, or do you return fire as much as you can? That depends on the situation.
Yeah, you know, like I said, you know, I wasn't there. I was literally a couple of K away with everyone else who didn't go. But you would. It depends on. It just does depend on the situation. You know, I remember him saying, you know, there was a rapid, it was like a rain of fire coming down from Taliban, and you know, they were crapping it because you know they're high up, they're elevated, they've got that advantage straight away, and you know they dealt with it. You know, as a result, air support was called in, Apaches, and you could hear them firing. You know, the vehicle got blown up, got denied, and. They killed all 30 Taliban, the Apaches. They wiped them out. They were trying to cross the river, and they mowed them down and killed them.
Is it the case, obviously, with the Taliban, a lot of times when that occurs, or do you actually get to know that those 30 are dead, or is that...
Yeah, we were told by the Apache pilots who killed them that they'd been taken out.
You got... With air support, I mean, how crucial is it for you to aiding you to do your job?
Massive. Especially in Afghanistan, you can't do without it. Because we got smashed so many times out there where we needed air support, you know, and fast air. And we got it as soon as we was in a tick, you know, troops in contact. There would always be air support on standby. But, you know, you've got to think at the same time you'd be in contact in Sangin or Kajaki or, you know, Halabala Calais, there could be troops in contact in, you know, Kajaki, for instance, or Nowzad. There'd be multiple contacts going on over the AO. You know, so you have to deal with what you've got to deal with.
And is it usually provided by the Americans, the support that you had?
Americans, British, Dutch, Belgium, a range of people who were out there giving their support, Danish. You know, you just, like I said, it's not your call for support, it's the OCs. You know, if they feel as though the shit's hit the fan to call in air support, then they'll use it.
So when you were at Fab Robinson, was it a daily thing that you would go out?
No, it was quiet. We didn't really go out. We went out a few times there till we got called back into Bastion. We went there and was told, right, you're here for 24 hours till we're going out on MOGs.
The MOGs, is that the U-MOG?
We're going north of Sangin, and there's different towns like Deuce Lake and Hyderabad, and you'd go on a program there and look for Taliban, see if they're operating around the area. So you'd go in there, and we got ambushed in Hyderabad again.
Can you tell me about what happened there?
Yeah, crossing the bridge. And they were like, it's really, really quiet. It's like something out of Vietnam. And with that, RPG went winging into the wall, and all hell broke loose in the graveyard. You know, but prior to that, no, wrong. Was it prior to that? It was either before that or after. I think it was after. We was on Op Silicon, where, you know, we was in contact for about 18 hours.
Can you take me through that one? I mean, just as
Silicon.
As you remember Silicon, yeah?
Well, it was the first major strike op the battalion had done. And I think it was one of the first major operations of British troops going into the Green Zone, because the Paras never used to go into the Green Zone. The Royal Marines sort of went into the Green Zone, but we went in and smashed them.
So was this a rolling programme, really, of advancing up through the Green Zone?
Well, this was going to be, you know, we wanted to clear insurgents out of the lower Sangin Valley, so we was going to go in and we was going to clear them out. Whether it be, you know, they run off or we kill them, they're going to go. You know, and it was the first major op, you know, which showed them that, you know, we're actually serious about what we're doing, we actually mean business. So I remember we stayed in the desert in a clock face for the whole night, till about an hour and a half before daylight. I remember it because it was the worst sandstorm they'd ever had in that region for years the night before. I say it was the 30th of I think it was the 30th of May, actually, the date of Silicon, 30th or 31st of May 2007.
So what was the sandstorm like?
Horrendous. I remember waking up and I had to sleep with my goggles on. It was just horrendous. It was bad. It was really bad. I remember him saying, like, you know, it was one of the worst sandstorms I've had in this area. But, you know, we got up, made up in the vehicles, and as we got down there, as daylight broke, they were like, well, A company's pushing through, you know, so forth, and B company's pushing through. You know, FSG continue your support up on Red Fort, which is literally about 150, 200 metres. Well, it's about 200 metres from Halabala Calais. Now, where we was on the rock face, you could see the whole Green Zone and Halabala Calais, you know, the town.
So you had a fairly good all-round vision, did you?
Yeah, excellent vision of where we was, where we were staying, and we stayed there for about 12 hours in total, getting smashed.
Can you tell me about what the green zone is? Just give me a description of it.
Yeah, just, it's like woodland, but it's where, obviously, the Taliban would stay. It's quite heavily, it's quite dense.
And is it surrounded by the desert?
Yeah, you know, you'd, where you'd have like, where you'd have like villages which have like got shitty roads and stuff, you'd have like then a town or a village, bit of green in there, you know, green zone, and then you'd have like the sparse desert again. That's what it was like, you know, it was like, imagine, I don't know, perbrite, you know, it's quite heavily, it's quite wooded. It's not as bad as that. It's, imagine this camp. It's got loads of green in between it, and that's what it was like.
So it's quite a contrast to the surrounding countryside, is it?
In a way. Like I said, you know, you've got buildings, but obviously they're surrounded by the green zone. You know, if they've got, if, it was quite hard. You could see buildings in there, but you probably couldn't see possible routes, and that, because it's quite, you know, it's quite densely, it's quite dense.
So it's very easy to defend or attack from, is it, really?
Yeah, you know, it was quite hard to see where Taliban were coming from. They weren't like it all the time. In some places, it was, it'd be desert, a bit of green, some houses, you know, and they'd fight from compounds, but there'd still be that element of green zone there where you couldn't see your troops for all the Greenland night.
So you'd set up positions at the Red Fort, is that right?
Red Fort, yeah.
And how did it start, how did the action sort of unfold from there?
10 minutes past ten, it was. So the Apaches had left at 10-12 minutes before it kicked off. I remember, we was looking out in the distance, and you heard gunfires. You heard gunfire, I think, to like the northwest or whatever it was. It was to my right hand side, and with that, you saw mortars being fired. About, well, I couldn't see how far they were away. They were close enough to see them being fired from Taliban. And then I think in the space of 2 minutes, we had something like 11 RPGs come smashing past us. You know, and they were close as well. They weren't, let's just fire them, they were close.
So what range would you think they were firing at you from?
A couple hundred metres.
And you couldn't see them down in the...
No, you just hear this and you think, oh my God. Well, you'd shit yourself, really. You know, I did, well, we did. I reversed the vehicle out, and I remember Andy saying to me, what are you doing? I said, well, we're getting smashed. He's like, reverse back, drive back in. And I went to drive back in, and RPG went wanging past where my bonnet would have been. So in a way, I'm sort of glad I moved. But, you know, the mistake in incoming.
And with their RPGs, and they're firing at you, are they firing and running, basically? Are they getting out of it as good?
Couldn't see them. You know, at one point they was in a building where they'd open the door, fire and get back in. So we hit it with javelin.
I was going to say, did you, you know, the times you were saying you fired the javelin, was that one of the occasions that you
no,
were firing?
I didn't fire till I was in Kajaki. The last 2 months of the tour was the last time I was off firing 9-1. But
so with Silicon, they were firing at you all the time with the RPGs and that. What was happening on the ground?
The company was in contact. They were clearing. They were doing room clearance drills through the town. And they got smashed. Taliban got smashed. You know, we had no casualties on that op at all.
What? How many Taliban were? You know, was there an estimate of the number that you've been engaged with?
I couldn't really tell, but it was a lot. They had quite a lot of people there, and we cleared them out. Built a fob there.
What was that one?
I think it might have been fob incoming. I'm not too sure. Don't quote me on that. I don't know. But they built a fob there. We stayed there for about a week. You know, we stay in people's houses. They're all gone, but we stayed there.
Is it the case with a lot of the local population around there that most of them have disappeared and that it's really only the insurgents that are left?
Yeah, they're all scared of the Taliban, and if they don't fight for the Taliban kill them. So, you know, it was just mainly Taliban. But after the initial first couple of days of Silicon, it was quiet. You know, we had a few more ops which were, you know, just like Kulang was the first day, was quite intense, and then the rest of the op was quite quiet.
Are they? I mean, obviously, there's a number that have been made casualties and being killed by the battalion. But are the rest of them withdrawing out of there? Is it hard to tell what's happening with the?
What do you mean?
Well, I was thinking with the Taliban. You know, obviously, when you're engaging, you say it's quite intensive for the first day. Are they withdrawing after that, or are they? Have you been successful against them?
Been successful quite a lot. No, we didn't get into Hyderabad because we couldn't. It was too hostile to get in to Hyderabad, and we was only probing to see if there was Taliban there. There was a lot of Taliban there. You know, we withdrew and went. You know, that was a bad week because on the way back we got hit by a mine strike where Sergeant Neves at the time got hit, and the Driver as well, who won the, I think it was the Queen's Gallantry Medal.
Well, obviously you were driving around there. What was the kind of mine threat like? Is there a lot of mines about?
Yeah, we were driving one point, and I thought, I'm sure we're in the wrong place. And Andy, my commander at the time, said, we're driving in a minefield. You know, so, you know, it was like, Jesus, what did we do? We got out of it, and there was a lot of mines. You know, we was quite lucky on the mine front.
And the mines, a lot of the time, is it mines that the Taliban have laid, or is it hangover from the Russians?
Hangover from the Russians. You know, they were there. You know, they were there for, I think it was 79. I think, I'm not actually sure when. I was 70s or 80s, they were there. And, you know, they couldn't defeat the Taliban. I mean, especially in Kajaki, they had a company on the peaks. And we was doing it with two platoons. So, you know, we were doing quite well, I think, personally.
So, you'd finished with Silicon. What was the next move for yourself?
It was on Oblast AQ Lane.
What was that one?
It bored me, really. It was the first time Moscow came out to see us. And it was just, like I said, the first day was a bit of resistance, but not a lot. We stayed out there for a couple of days. I actually come back to the UK on R&R in June 12th at that point, to the 25th. When I come back out into theatre, I went straight out to Nowzad.
Okay, can you describe to me Nowzad?
Massive town, nobody there. Another classic example of Taliban driving everyone out. It was boring. We spent about 6 weeks there, and it was boring.
Where were your positions?
AMP Hill, which is about, probably about a K from Nowzad DC, district centre, which is about a K. And it basically, it's a massive hill where I'd like the Russians used, it had a Russian trench system in there. And we'd sleep in the hill. You'd sleep underneath cover in the hill. We had loads of gun nests around it. And you'd just wait and see what happened, but nothing happened. We got mortared a couple of times, that was it.
So with the Taliban, they weren't in the town, they were?
There was. But we never used to go out there because, we didn't have the manpower at that point. The company had been split between Nowzad and Fob Fox. And, you know, Fob Fox was getting smashed and we didn't have enough blokes to go out on a patrol. So we just kept Nowzad locked down, sort of thing.